This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator for Basketball Victoria. I actually have guests this week, and not of the Parisian kind. I have the high-performance coach for the Victoria Countrymen, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to be back, Rob.
Excellent. And we have the high-performance coach for the Victoria Country Women, Zoe Carr. Welcome again.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be back.
Wow. That's a level of enthusiasm we're not really used to on this podcast.
Get up and about.
Look, I'm not suggesting we shouldn't be up and about. I'm just saying, not normal. Like, normally it's dragged into here, kicking and screaming. Oh, I don't want to do the podcast this week. You've given me a crap topic. What are you doing
so
to me?
Full of it.
As opposed to Coops, you just come, yeah, no worry. I'll be there whenever you want to be. Like, no problems. Low maintenance.
Sure.
That's what we all want in our, our coaching. High performance, low maintenance. It's what we all aspire to be.
That's the combo.
Yeah, and fail miserably. But it's what we all aspire to be in particular. So, again, coaches, thank you very much for everyone that interacts on the social media platforms. If you could give the podcast a follow, that would obviously be greatly appreciated on airing. Any likes, shares, retweets, or just telling someone, hey, there's this great podcast out called something else. But listen to Talking Split while you're listening to those ones. That'd be fantastic. The hashtag Talking Split, you can obviously get in touch with us. We did have a couple of coaches reach out over the last couple of weeks to talk about various topics. One guy that slid into the DMs a little bit and was going back and forth with me on various things. I'm now the proud owner of billions of dollars worth of cryptocurrency, it turns out. But you are always welcome to reach out, or you can do it via email. On Twitter, Coops, you are on?
At CoachNCB.
Zoe, you are at?
At ZoeCar85.
And I'm at Rob Calder if you do want to reach out over anything. So what we are going to talk about this week is tournament coaching. So I don't know about the way you two feel about this, but on my end, I would rather coach in a tournament than coach in a season. That's my personal preference. I feel like it's more fun. You get to do a whole bunch of other cool stuff. I'll start off with you, because what would you rather do? Would you rather be in a season or a tournament?
Oh, can I be that guy and say it depends on the first question of the pod?
Yes, all right, you can.
Elite tournament play it's unreal. Like, you know, the pressure, the reduced time frames, compacting that much basketball, into a week or 2 weeks is pretty special. And, and you can avoid, potentially some of those, those season lulls or those moments in the season where you're like, oh, how many games left? And, kind of got one eye on the door. So, no, I love tournament play. I think it's fantastic.
Yep. Zoe, what about you?
Yeah, it's close, but tournaments, I think the amount of growth, to be selfish, the amount of growth you can do as a coach in that sort of environment, like you say, Coops, like a compacted, game, 12 hours later game, maybe 14 hours later game, is huge. But in a season sense, though, the amount of development that you can get out of your athletes is also pretty special as well. But if you held a gun to the head and said, which one, pick one, I'd probably pick tournaments.
Development. Like we coach for development. It's all about trying to get a win in a tournament. That's what this is about. Now, I am being very facetious on this one. We, of course, want to develop our athletes as much as we possibly can. So it is one of those. The reason I sort of say tournament is you get to kind of shut off from everything else going on in the world. Like, I mean, Coops, you've just come back from under-20s national championships. How's everything going in the world? Like, you wouldn't have checked a newspaper, social, like, you wouldn't have had time.
No, definitely still in the bubble right now. Kind of looking at my laptop and being like, why aren't I on the WA scout right now? And, did I really drive to work or am I at the State Basketball Centre? It's really cool in that respect that you genuinely just get to focus on basketball. You kind of live that life of, hotel stadium, immerse yourself in it and be around, competitive people, elite people that are also embracing that environment, and you're bouncing ideas off each other, and, you're looking at ways in which they're preparing, and it's just such a great learning environment, such a great competitive environment, and it definitely takes you away from the real world for most of the time.
You come back and you've had to pay your water bill. Where did this come from? Like, this sucks. Like, this
actually, the first thing I had to do was pay a parking infringement for my wife. So that definitely brought me back to reality pretty
Welcome
quick.
Welcome home, honey.
Yeah, exactly right. Are you sure it was hers, or have you just sort of said, look, it might have been you, or maybe it was me?
No, it was definitely hers, but the car is in my name, so that stings a little bit.
You got to start doing all the transfers to that at all. So when we look at tournaments, I mean, the first thing we usually get, you very rarely go into a tournament where there's only one pool. you normally go into tournaments where there's two pools. So has anyone ever grabbed a tournament fixture and thought, gee, I think I've got the easier of the two pools?
Never seems to happen to me. I'm always in the hard one. But there is often an easier pool. But in saying that, sometimes coming out of the harder pool is better, mainly because you get harder games, you know, it tunes you up quicker, but then your crossovers, once you start going on to the other side of the draw and you know, into quarters and semis, etc., you start playing easier teams there as well. So it does sometimes allow a clearer path to finals.
Yeah, it kind of depends a little bit on how many teams. Like if you have two pools of four and everyone gets a crossover, you're punching the air and saying, okay, I'll take the harder pool, like no problems at all. Like, yeah, I suppose internationally you always sit there and say, geez, what does this crossover look like? Who could it possibly be? And not that you're trying to tank games or anything like that, but if there's one eye on how can we avoid the US, that's usually like, hey, see if we can get third so that we don't have to cross into that. Like, have you had any experience with that sort of stuff, Coops?
Yeah, I mean, the most recent Crocs guys, the pools for the World Cup had actually already been picked prior to Asia Cup. And so they could actually work out. So if they finish first, this is the World Cup pool they would be in. So you could actually do some mapping prior to, you know, the selection event and work out, okay, which is, you know, which is the best pool, which is going to avoid the US potentially the longest and so on. So that was a unique situation that those guys obviously had to encounter. But you definitely, you know, you definitely think about mapping. You know, you also think about, you know, your world ranking, and, you know, ranking number one coming out of Asia, you know, is important. You know, it can help you in pool play. So yeah, there's definitely some things to think about, and coaches would be lying if they didn't have one eye on the draw and the schedule and the pool.
What's
and the map.
What's my easiest path to get through to a medal game? Like, where can I head to this? Which is the game that I really have to win, and which is the game that is just nice to win? It's those types of things. But I mean, we're talking sort of an international sort of spoke there. Like, Zoe, you dealt with it last year, obviously, and I think we've spoken about it a little bit on the pod previously. You had to take a team for Asia Cup and a team for Worlds. Probably not the same two teams you would have had. And I suppose a lot of people at an association land would deal with something similar. They'd have one team for tournaments, in particular our country associations, that play VJBL and country champs, which is, you know, such a big event for so many people. It's, they potentially have two different squads all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, normally you would look at probably two different, if you're going to Asia and Worlds, you'd look at two different teams for that. We didn't have that luxury because it was all in one. We went away for over a month. So, you know, we had to try and find the blend to get it done, and it was difficult. But yeah, it is something you've just got to learn to work with. And I think the biggest thing that it comes down to is understanding what the tournament is and how to play to it. So, for example, in Asia, you know, it is fast, it is physical, they can shoot the three, you know, they get away with a lot. You know, like, if you don't bother, I'll give anybody some advice looking to go to an Asian Championships, don't bother yelling travel, don't bother. You're not getting it, just don't bother. And it can be really hard. And with their foot speed and then the, you know, the gather step that they're using, it's really hard to guard. So, you know, that sort of, to that you would take probably smaller but quicker physical, you know, those sort of athletes. Your bigs need to be able to move and defend the ball and all that sort of stuff. And when you get to Worlds, you start to come up against teams that are, you know, similar balance to us. You know, you can afford to take maybe a bigger, slower sort of athlete because, you know, your European teams will have one of those, probably three. So, you know, it's more comes down to understanding what you're going into and then trying to play to that. But then there's also the flip side of it, make teams play to you as well. But to be able to do that, you have to be elite at what you're doing.
That's what I was going to ask you, Coops, on that. How big is the difference between picking a team for someone else and what you're potentially going to be seeing versus just picking the team that's going to suit you best?
Yeah, I think that comes down to talent pool. You know, if you have the luxury of having these, you know, big, deep talent pools, you can make some more decisions around the balance of the group, you know, maybe us versus them. But I think as the talent pool gets smaller, you know, you've got to start kind of erring on the side of, hey, we just got to pick our best kids and everybody else has to play to us. And then it comes back to, you know, your system, your coaching in finding different ways to be innovative and use the strengths that you have to, you know, to compete.
Okay. So we know going into tournaments in particular, you're going to have to do a lot of work, things like scout review, those types of things. Coops, what are the big three things for you that you would take as you're preparing to go into a tournament? Like, what are the big three things that you would make sure that you had, so to speak, coming in?
Yeah. Refining them to three, some pretty clear and concise understanding of our system of play. You know, that another word we could probably use would be identity. That we have a DNA, that we understand who we are and how we're trying to play. And again, that's about maximizing our strengths. That would be one. A good understanding of our culture, you know, establishing a culture around, you know, playing together, playing for, you know, the old cliche, playing for the name of, you know, on the front of the jersey. But, you know, that's really important when you get into tournament play, because you're potentially going to drop that game, or you're potentially going to have, you know, some athletes sleep in, or, you know, make a mistake, you know, not something that they're trying to do. It's just inadvertently going to happen. And how are you going to respond from those scenarios in tournament play when you don't, you know, have the luxury of 3 or 4 days, you know, before a game that you can figure it out? You know, you got to figure that stuff out, you know, within an hour of how you're going to deal with those guys and how it's going to relate to the next game. So, yeah, system of play, a culture around, you know, playing the right way, playing for each other, and especially having some peer-to-peer accountability. And then the third one would probably just be my procedures. So my best practice around operations, so that especially, you know, the coaching staff and the support staff are really clued into, okay, this is how we're going to operate. You know, these are the things that we need to be on top of. You know, these are the things that we got to have great attention to detail, so that when we get into, you know, the suck, when we get into, you know, the tournament play and it's going crazy and it's, you know, on the bus back, get to recovery, this assistant stays at the stadium to scout, this assistant's on the review, you know, and it's all happening, that everybody's on the same page and we're just humming along. So, yeah, there's a lot more that we could talk about, but those would be my top three.
So would yours be any different?
Mine's probably a little, you know, obviously that is so important what Coops has just spoken about.
But you're wrong. This is the conversation I have all the time with Zoe. I hear what you're saying, but you're wrong.
Wow, I'm glad I came in today. I'm going to go on a different track is what I was going to say. And go more tactical. And So the big three for me would be defensive transition rules. Who's taking the ball? How many am I having on the glass? You know, what are our rules? Is it pin to sideline? Is it mass turns? Is it, you know, all those sort of things? Do we hit the key and fan out, or do we find the 3-point line and match up? All those sort of things. So I'd put that into play. Number two for me would be pick and roll coverage. So which ones am I taking, which are going to be our baseline rules? And then the third one would be our rotations of closeouts. So where are we going to rotate from? Whose responsibility is what? Are we going to shade middle? Are we going to shade baseline? Are we going to try and stay neutral? All that, where's our hand placement? All that sort of stuff would probably be, you know, a big three for me. All of these athletes today do a lot of work on their offense, and I think anybody that gets to that level in coaching can probably navigate their way through that. Defense is where it's going to be the difference, I think, when you go away to those tournaments. Can you hold those teams to winnable margins? And especially internationally, that's not easy. So I'd be putting bulk work into those three.
Well, put me in my place. That's pretty good, turns out. So it is, I mean, we just watched it over the course of the last week of 20. You talk about the defense there, Zoe. We commentated a few of those finals games. Like, if we said it once, we said it 1,000 times. They need to be able to pull the ball up on defense. Geez, this team is doing very well on the middle pick and roll. I wonder what the coverage change is going to be. And is there any chance we can get a hand up on that shooter on the perimeter?
Can I just say, because yes, we did say that a lot, we know as well that
it's tough.
there are coaches that are saying, we'll change to this coverage, and it's just not happening.
Yep.
So it's not all, we're not, we're certainly not sitting up there.
Just for anyone watching our games, anytime there was a mistake, that's what happened.
Yeah.
So the coaches were right on top of it. But the
three plays ahead almost.
Players didn't execute it, you know, just so. Yeah.
Coaching 101, where can I delegate this little bit of accountability towards? But it's what we go through, though, is, and we look at probably the scores of the, say, quarterfinals onwards. Very rarely did you get like a 90 to 95 score line once you hit the finals time. It is whose defense holds up the best, really, that will give you the best opportunity to win those games. So it really is like the D-trans, so vital. And it ties into what you were talking about, Coos, with like know what your identity is. Like, are you that type of a team? Like, are you using on-ball screen coverages to simply negate what they're doing, or are you using it as an advantage? Because we saw some of the teams, like at under-20s during the week, had really good success with just trapping the on-ball screen. And it wasn't from a, oh, we're just trying to try and get through this and just hope they don't score on us. It was a, let's get the ball out of their hands. Let's put that point guard under pressure. Let's make them now have to play to us rather than going down the path of, oh, let's just hope they don't score on us on the on-ball screen coverage. Like, how many, just out of curiosity, how many on-ball coverages would you take into a tournament, Coops? Like, it depends, obviously, on the age and the level and those types of things, but how many would you actually have in your pocket?
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to go in with a baseline, you know, something that we're pretty familiar with that would be where we start, and then probably plan B and plan C. So there would be three coverages, mainly.
And one of them is usually switch.
Yeah, one of them is usually switch, you know, obviously because we can use that in a variety of ways, especially when we're talking about managing the clock. You know, are we going to switch late clock, or, you know, potentially change the coverage within a possession? And then I would also, I'm never afraid to throw something at the athletes off the whiteboard. You know, if we get through three and we're still hemorrhaging points, it's not like, let's just go back to the start of the list.
And strap in everyone.
Yeah.
He's four.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and oh, maybe yeah. five and six.
That's
it's,
it. Yeah. Let's keep trying some things out. And, you know, and I know I've spoken about it on the pod before, but, you know, I think you just got to keep trying things. And so at the end of the day, you know, there's going to be some games where A, B, and C aren't working. So let's break the glass.
And you're 100% right there, Coops. I've always been the same of, you know, if the rules or the core rules aren't working, let's try something else. And a lot of people always sort of seem to shout that down and say, well, if you haven't done it at practice, you can't put it in you can't tell them to do it in a game. And I get what they're saying there. I think one of the important things is if you do throw something at them, for instance, it's almost always something like a box and one that you throw, like it's something like that. But it's just got to be that your expectations on success in that have to be realistic.
It's a great point.
And if your expectations on that are realistic, I don't think there's anything wrong with throwing something new at them. And, you know, like you said, oh, well, we didn't do it at training, so let's just continue to let the scoreboard tick over for them and, you know, we'll practice it on Tuesday night. Well, you know, let's try and stop it now. Yeah, let's try and stop it now. Like, and as well as it's especially in the, if you're talking juniors and, you know, 20s, 18s, 16s, nationals, it's a part of development as well. You know, you cannot tell me if you get to those, you know, NBL, WNBL, NBA, you know, all of those, EuroLeague, that a coach is not going to throw something at you that you might not be across for the sake of you. Like, if they want to put it, like, to play, they want it implemented, they'll throw it on there. So I think it's a good thing to be able to, you know, and I think it's a part of coaching. You know, it's about adjusting to what's happening to you on the floor rather than just sitting back and going, oh, well.
Yeah, we actually had an example of that this week. So we come into the first game. We're playing NBA Global Academy with, you know, what is he now, 7-3 maybe, Rocco Zakarski.
You Depends know. On who you've just played against. Everyone adds an inch or two when they've just played against. Oh, he was like 8'1".
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll go with that now because he is legitimately massive.
He's huge. He's, you know, ripping kid, you know, highly talented and provides vertical spacing, you know, something that we weren't going to be able to challenge with
vertical
our...
Vertical spacing. I feel like Coops is going to coin that term.
I like it.
Cha-ching every time that's used.
Yeah, and so for us it was like, okay, well, how are we going to handle this? You know, we can't switch it. You know, we don't particularly want to drops. Like, you know, he's going to be a handful. So we spoke about jam and under. Had we worked on jam and under throughout the campaign? No. And here we are, game one, and we're on a completely different, you know, a different coverage.
But you're lucky that that is the staple defense of junior basketball at the moment, on ball coverage, jam and under.
Yeah. Or drops. Yeah. Like it's the same sort of things. But, I mean, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, don't you? Like it's...
Well, that's it. And we came out, and because we'd worked on a lot of drops with our posts, in, you know, especially that mid-pick coverage, I think it was like our first three possessions. Instead of going under, we tried to force over, and it went layup, 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 timeout. Okay, guys, let's have a chat about this. And then
we'll just tinker with what we're doing now. It's not wrong. We're just going to tinker with it a little bit.
And then the best part about it, and the game comes back to expectations, comes back to, you know, knowing your group and all those nuances of coaching. We cut to our fifth and sixth place game a couple of days ago against the ACT, and they've got, you know, 7 foot Bowen Beattie, who's also going to provide us with, you know, some serious issues around the rim. So we go back to jam and under, and in the film session, we spoke about it. We said, hey guys, what hurt us in the jam and under against our global? Oh, we try to fight over the top. Okay, we make that adjustment today. Yep. Okay, fantastic. First three plays, try to go over layup, try to go over layup, try to go over layup, timeout. So yeah. Just take everything with a grain of salt. Keep trying. Keep understanding.
Coaching's fun, right?
Yeah, that's it. If you're going to put some stuff in late, you know, you got to deal with some of the errors. But we had a lot of fun, you know, throwing different things at the athletes, and yeah, it was cool.
I think that's part of it too. Like in particular, like as you say, Zoe, like a box on one type stuff, or just changing your on ball screen coverage. The hardest part, I think, is actually getting your players to commit to something they haven't seen before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's that real in for a penny, in for a pound. Like, if we're going to do this, we're just going to go flat out and try it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. We're probably not really expecting it to work long term, because in realistically, tournament coaching, the other coach is going to make adjustments eventually anyway. So you might only get three possessions where it actually has to be effective before the other coach changes something down the other end. And now it's back on you to change what's going on as well. So it's just never as easy as just, this will just work. Well, no, it doesn't just work.
Yeah, and no. I think something that's really important, and we saw it a bit over the last week, and you probably felt it in games at times, Coops, is you've got to do like the amount of games we saw, the margin for, you know, the third quarter and most of the fourth was like 10, 12 points and never really broke that double figure margin, never really got it in to be able to put pressure on. And, you know, sort of midway through the fourth, you know, we're on commentary and I'm saying, hey, now's the time to make a change and take some risks. You might lose by 30, but you might just have those three possessions where you go steal, score, steal, score, steal, score, and now it's a game and you've broken that sort of deadlock of that margin that hasn't really moved for almost a half. It takes bravery, because it's also, God, losing by 10 is better, feels better than losing by 30. But at the end of the day, you've got to put yourself in a position to have a crack to get the win. And especially in tournament play, unless you're being a little strategic and you're trying to tank the game and all that sort of stuff. But I think, you know, recognizing the time, recognizing how the game has trended, and then what adjustments you need to make, risk versus reward. And, you know, a lot of the time when we saw teams take the risk, it actually paid off for them, whereas the teams that didn't, it actually ended up worse for them. It blew out anyway. Yeah. So
I mean, the thing was, the women's quarterfinals, it was Victoria and WA, was one of those games where both teams had a few injuries going into that game, to be fair, so it almost felt like, oh, it's going to be like a war of attrition more than anything else as to who's got the healthy bodies at the end. WA didn't necessarily keep it close. Like it sort of sat at that 15 points for a while. Like Victoria kicked out fairly early and it sort of stayed at that. And we made the comment, like, at some point something's going to change here. And it almost felt like WA were just biding their time. It's like, look, if we can just keep it close enough for long enough, we'll have a swing at this thing down the stretch. And we'll see how it shakes out. And they went to a press, I want to say 5 or 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and did enough to just disrupt Victoria. And like the timeout came for Victoria, which was good coaching for them as well. But it was just enough. Mm. Like it just put a little bit of doubt. And I think it got back to maybe, you know, 8 or 9 points. And Victoria, I got the impression, and again, I'm not speaking for their staff, but I got the impression Victoria still felt like we're winning this game. It's okay. But the wrong team, it could just be enough to just sort of say, oh, maybe we're not. Like, and panic sets in. Like, it's, I think the hardest thing, like, how do you stop your team from panicking when something comes in that you haven't necessarily prepared for, Zoe?
Well, for starters, you don't scream things like relax. I've seen that a lot.
Why aren't you relaxing?
Relax!
As eyeballs bulging, bright red face, like, I mean, spit going everywhere. Like,
ultimately, you need to be the face they need to see. So if you're calm, they'll stay calm. If you're clear and purposeful with your messaging, that will help. If you stutter over things, if you're, you know, you show aggression in your voice or get caught up in the moment, that's going to project onto them, and that's what they're then going to carry. So coming out of that timeout, had the Vic staff been like, "No, we've got to do this," and talking a million miles an hour, that's what they would have taken onto the floor. So a lot of it really comes down to you as the coach, and you know, timeout placement is key as well, breaking momentums, you know, reassurance for your team if you're the team that's panic is starting to set in, but also knowing your rotations. So know when you need to know that going into the tournament of who is the five that if things are about to get real, I need to have on the floor.
Yep. And do you have that written down on your bench? Like, do you have one of those little grids where it's like best free throw shooting team, best pressing team, that
yes.
sort of stuff?
Yep. Yeah. And coaching staff would have that. You know, it's all across, because also when you're up and about and you're coaching, you know, it's probably more vital that your assistant coaches have that information and can bring that to you because there's a bit going on.
But you can also turn to them and say, hey, get us our free throw.
Get us out, yeah. You know,
and they know what that
make
is
those
now.
Adjustments, you yep. know, those sort of things. So they're the sort of thing. And as your tournament evolves, that might change because of things like injury or even just performance. You know, you might have an athlete you didn't expect. And
well, someone's gone 2 of 15 from the foul line. And all of a sudden it's like, well, that's not our that's free not throw our free kid throw anymore. Like,
but they're things you have to monitor all the way through. But I think having that sort of preparation and then, like I mentioned, being the face they need to see, I think is key to help with that panic.
So how would you go about adjusting someone that – and I've done – this is purely therapeutic for me more than anything else, so I'll ask you two the question and I hope that you have the answer for it. You pick a kid and it's like, that's our shooter. Like, we're going into the tournament, that's the kid that I know can stick shots for us. They have 3 games and they're like 1 of 13. How do you fix that kid's mentality and mindset? Because I would assume it's not a mechanical thing. I mean, it might be. They may have had a release that doesn't necessarily allow for them to play at the higher level as you go into that tournament. How would you deal with that athlete to try and get them back on track? Yes, this is what I wanted, crickets.
No, we were waiting for who you wanted to go.
Yeah, no. I had no answers for it. So.
No, who do you want to answer?
Well, I would like you both to answer because I would like an answer from both of you because I'm hoping that it will be different.
Okay, well, I'll go first then. It's more what we were talking about. Who did you... I would, in our practice, generally in tournament play, you also have practice time. I'd take that athlete back to just your fundamentals, a bit of form shooting, you know, just to get him back into rhythm. And, you know, a lot of it, again, is reassurance that you still have that faith. I'd still be running shooting plays for them and plays to get them wide open looks. But the most important part is wide open looks where they want them. So we can have our – if you've got a dynamite corner three shooter, for example, and you keep – running like a horns flare at the top that gets them like a slot three, well, they're probably going to be able to stick that too. But get them something in the corner. Have them coming off a hammer while there's action on the other side of the floor or something. Find a way to get them the shot they're comfortable with, because inside their head they know this is my shot. So they're more likely to hit from there. And as soon as they, you know, see a couple go through the net, then it's probably all over. But from a straight shooter's mentality, on top of that, you know, put them in position to try and get them to the line so they can then, again, see the ball go through the net easily without that pressure on of, you know, defense and within movement and play can also then help them for when they step back out.
Coops, what do you got?
Yeah, just building on that because, yeah, I think they're all great strategies. Probably from a system standpoint, you know, start them, you know, so immediately show confidence in them, run the first play for them, you know, knowing that if they probably see that first shot go in, maybe that's going to break that bit of deadlock or that little bit of self-doubt. So finding ways to do that.
What if they miss that first? Like you've put all that pressure on them and, again, experience. You run that first play for them and they clunk the first one and you just see the shoulders drop. Like how do you – like do you – at any stage do you just go, hey, this is just not your tournament and shelve them? Do you just try and work them in somewhere else and try and maybe play them in a little bit of junk time to just get it up? Like it's – what would you think there?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably run another play from the start of the half.
Yep.
You know,
shooter's mentality.
Mentality, that's it. Yeah, coming from a shooter. That's, so, but probably segueing into that is the mental game, you know, and how am I supporting this athlete mentally? So, first off, I would make sure that they understood that, yes, they are a shooter, but they're not just there to just shoot, you know. So how can we have some conversations around impacting the game without making – you know, perimeter shots. So can I get to the free throw line? Can I be the best defender on the floor? Can I help control the glass? Can I be a leader? You know, all these different things that obviously, you know, help make basketballs more complete and more successful. I talk a little bit about, you know, and we talk to our SDP athletes about this a lot, you know, having specific, controllable and positive goals heading into games and making shots aren't controllable. You know, I mean, there's so many things that factor into that. So, you know, if they're trying to, you know, internalize and just focus on the make or the miss, you know, then my conversation is, oh, well, what was your SCP for today? You know, oh, it was to, you know, to make sure that I didn't get blown by. Well, have you been blown by yet? No. Well, sounds like you're having a pretty good game then. You know, and then, oh, yeah, okay, well, coach does believe in me. I am having some success out there. Yeah, and then maybe by, and Bestie does a good job, he talks about, you know, going external rather than internal. That's a nice clean way of saying it. You know, focusing on the team, focusing on the things that we can control, focus on success in other areas. Hopefully that's going to bring around other confidence that maybe translates to the shooting.
Yeah, I think it also comes back to, we spoke about it a little bit before, if they clunk that first shot and they look over at you and you've dropped your shoulders or your body language is poor, that's, again, going to project onto the athlete. And there's other ways of seeing success with that. So if they shoot, they're not shooting well, but they're taking the right shots, they should be then predictable shots, which means they're easier to rebound. So if we get a no board and a finish, you can actually pat them on the back for that to be able to say, hey, keep shooting those because –
yeah.
You know,
it's within our system.
It's within our it's the right shot, and we're able to clean that up on the glass. So keep shooting it. I want you to keep shooting it, and you know, that reassurance of that, as Coop said, that you've still got faith in them is really, really important, because I would never shelve them.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest reasons was actually your nationals in Ulverston, when the player's name escapes me. But
I know who you're talking about. I won't name it.
Queensland had not shot very well for the game, for the tournament, sorry, and then went, what, from?
4 of 6, I'll say.
Something, yeah. Like, and
as if it's not burned into my room. <at the moment.
laughs> But when, and, you know, people might go, oh, 4 of 6, but it was what the 4 of 6 was. It blew that thing out really quickly and made it really difficult, almost broke the back of the other team. Yeah. So
one was the backbreaker.
Yeah.
I remember that one
so
vividly.
It's just like, I would never shelve a shooter, especially if you know what their ability is and that they do have that ability. And that, but there's also a difference between, and it's probably another pod, but a shooter and a maker as well. Like, are they high volume anyway, or are they efficient actual makers?
I think too, there's always room to discuss technique. You know, it's a fine line. You don't want to get into a game and be overanalyzing, and you know, and you know, help contribute to the yips or something like that. But, you know, especially younger shooters, you know, maybe if we're talking about tournament play for, you know, VJBL athletes, but, you know, what's the self-awareness like in them understanding why they're missing? So just might be a flyby touch point of, hey, how's your balance right now? You know.
Feet under the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Something like, are you holding your follow through? Just something, you know, really short and sharp that maybe they can just tap back into, that's going to help clean it up in the moment.
Yep.
And watch, sort of analyze, go back and look at the games. What sort of shots are you getting them? So are we doing the work as a team to get them open, or are we just giving them the ball and saying, score, you know, with defense set, you know, like, and sometimes we think we're doing the work and then you watch the film and go, oh, actually there's daylight between, you know, the screener and that screener's D, or it might be them. They're not cutting off that hard enough or fast enough. So it's, you know, now an uncontested shot comes either semi-contested or fully contested, you know, all those sort of things. So I'd definitely go back to the footage for that.
I think one of the things too with any shooter is you need to have a backdoor play for them, because they do tend to be guarded a little bit tighter. They do tend to, like, a lot of defenses now are starting to top lock shooters and saying, well, no, you're not getting anything coming up. So you do have to have something to just get them a layup. And similar to what you were saying before, Zoe, like, you need to see the ball go through the net, because the way kids shot free throws the last week at 20s, even getting to the foul line may not necessarily make them see the ball go through the net. So can you get them something on that end? Coops, you spoke about defensively. Can you get them up the floor defensively? And they can be the person that gets on the end of a layup, because your defense has done the work. But it is a little bit of a mental grind, I think, for those kids. And, you know, the hard part is highlighting, oh, you're in a slump. I was like, oh, good. You know,
yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yeah,
thanks for awesome. That, coach. Yeah. Like, I feel fantastic about this. Whereas, like, hey, right shot. Like, and I mean, it probably ties into to where I was heading next with, like, things like film review. Is it's okay to highlight missed shots, I feel like, within your film review, if it's the right shot. Like, I think that's a good thing, because it now gives confidence that, hey, that's the right shot. We'd expect you to shoot that. It's just missed. That's okay. Yeah. Like, we move on from that. But it's the right shot. So just that reinforcement of, hey, you're doing the right thing. It will turn eventually. Like, no one's a bad shooter for the rest of their life. If they've been a shooter previously, they'll be a shooter again somewhere else.
Yeah. And do you have your best penetrator on the floor at the same time as your shooter?
Or a post
because
player.
Because, you need something that can go internal, like into the key, and penetrate the key. So, yeah, post player or penetrator. Or are they in the rotation? So when they come out, those players are coming in, and, you know, so do you have that balance on the floor to be able to help get them open? Yep.
All right. So I asked Coops to give me your three first last time. So I'll ask you first, Zoe. So just so we're very clear about where I'm going with this question. What are the three pieces of equipment you would make sure that you have with you going into a tournament?
So are we talking tech?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's say a whiteboard is a
whiteboard.
Given.
Yeah,
a whiteboard is a given. Like,
Texas.
If you roll in without a whiteboard, don't worry about the podcast. There is nothing in here that can help you.
So from a tech perspective, this is hard to only pick three because I have a...
I'll let you put camera and tripod together if that
helps
you.
Okay, cool. No, because I have a bit of a rule. I don't leave anything up to anyone else. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can take an HDMI cord. And what if the TV is old and doesn't have it, or it's not working, or you don't have access, or, you know, those sort of things. You never know what you're walking into. So I always like to take a projector as well. So obviously camera and tripod with, and I'm going to mix these in as well, tons of batteries and tons of SD cards.
This is what you call cheating, Coops.
Projector is really big. And I would also... How am I going to put these together? I'll put the hard drive in with the...
tech gear?
But I always take as well a... like a little... you can get them from Officeworks. They're like stick-on whiteboards, and you can have them in your room, or you can take them to games if we've all been to a game where the whiteboard's like no bigger than your coach's board. So, you know, you can take it with you if you want to, or you can just have it in your room for review, and it just helps you do a, like, it's helped me with just sort of brain dumping when I get back to the accommodation, or we're talking about how we're going to guard something, or, you know, we can get up there and just see it and all that sort of stuff. So they're pretty big ones for me.
Yeah, the whiteboard stuff in particular, I think, is really vital. Like, it's, I saw a coach at school nationals maybe 2 or 3 years ago roll in with literally like an Officeworks whiteboard. Like, it was massive and just rolled in. And it's like, I hope you got someone that's like hard of sight or something like that, and that's why you've got it, because the other team can literally read everything you have on your whiteboard at the moment. Like, it was insanely big. But Coos, was there anything else in there? Because, like, laptop, we'll throw in with the tech. I'll give you the pass on that one.
Yeah. Then I'd probably have to say my sports code license, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Basketballs.
Yep.
Always definitely find they're pretty handy. yeah, I mean, there's just so many choices. I feel like whatever I say next is just gonna be pointless. My slacks and shoes, so I can actually get out there and coach and not be running to Target at like 11:30 at night trying to find coaching gear.
It's amazing how often that happens, though.
100%.
People forget, I've got my pants, and it's like, yeah, no belt.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be a problem for you. Like, it's all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, Zell, you went off to an Asia Cup and a Worlds last year looking like a pack horse. Like, there was so much crap in those bags, it wasn't funny. But it is one of those things where you want to take everything just in case. You don't ever know.
And it ended up having to be used as well. So it was sort of... Vindication. I'd rather have it and not need it, be honest. And, you know, it allows you to just have that peace of mind that whatever happens, you're okay.
That's it.
And particularly if you're going overseas, always take your own adapters, your own, and take maybe four of them because one might not work. And, you know, again, I go probably a little over the top with the things that I take and making sure that, you know, nothing's left to chance. But that's how that helps calm me, is knowing that I have all of that. And, you know, so it might not be for everyone, but yeah, it's I think it's vital. And especially if you're going to look to break off into groups and maybe do some small group film or something like that. Again, you know, we had one TV that worked, and then none of the others worked with HDMI cords. So, you know, when we broke off, we were able to use a projector. So, you know, it allowed us to have those sort of those moments and be able to have it so you can actually see it rather than just a little screen, you know.
Absolutely. So when you get into tournaments, it feels like the time goes really quick because you're into game, you're into prep, you play your game, you're into recovery, you got to get kids fed and all those types of things. What do you do with the downtime? Because there will still be some downtime. Like, what would you have your athletes doing in that time, Coos? Like, would you have them just leave them to their own devices because some kids do just need to separate out from others, or would you, like, plan things out for them to do?
I'm a bit of a planner. You know, I like to be across what's happening. It definitely depends on the tournament. Like, for our team this past week, we had 3 double days in 6 days. Yep. So
there is no downtime.
Downtime did not exist at all. So, obviously just talking about that sort of experience, the message to the athletes, you know, from myself and the staff was when you had the downtime, it's lights off, it's no screens, it's lying down, preferably legs above your heart, and it's rest. It's rest. Like, we just did not have time, to be, you know, mucking around and things like that. Now, look, again, you know, that time spent developing relationships and so on at tournaments is outstanding. We want to nurture that. But at the same time, if, you know, we're playing that many games in that shorter period of time, the rest is maximized. If we have a day off, like at a Worlds, we talk, something I learned from Justin Schuller, you know, he would like to put a culture walk in, you know, to get out, you know, especially if we're somewhere around the world that, you know, the athletes would never go again, or, you know, some of the athletes that we take away have never been on a plane before, those sorts of things. So to actually go and experience the culture that we're in, you know, rather than just go from a basketball to, you know, basketball stadium to a hotel is, I think, is important. You know, we're doing some active recovery, you know, we're exposing the athletes to something pretty cool. And then I think the other part would be just that awareness of how is the group gelling and do they have the ability to connect and build and have those sorts of conversations and connections without us prompting. If they can, great, and we just leave them to that and they'll figure it out. Otherwise, like, maybe do we need a culture hit? You know, do we need to organize an Uno game or a get to know you activity that maybe just might bring the group together a little bit more that we may need later in the week.
Yep. Zoe, anything else?
Not really. No, I, you're probably getting a bit of an insight into my over the top organization, but I planned their downtime. So, because it's important, you have to make sure, obviously when you've got 6 games in like 4 days, that's probably not possible, but in a, you know, an Asia Cup or a World sense, you do have a lot of time. So a hit with the parents, I think, is important, and it can be a bit nerve-wracking to do that, to allow the athletes to go back to their parents, because you've got them in this bubble, and you know, we all know what can sometimes happen when parents start to have influence, and you should be doing this and you should be doing that, etc. But at the end of the day, with these juniors, they're, you know, 14 to 17 years old, they probably need a hit with their parents. So, you know, organizing something like that, as Coop said, you know, organizing some, you know, time where it's just them by themselves, quiet, but also time to have just individual check-ins, you know, give them an opportunity, especially the younger they are, that I think the more important it is, because they're not going to, in a group setting, bring up any issues that they have, and they're probably not going to come to you and tell you that, because they feel like, you know, that they don't want to be, you know, high burden, maintenance. Yeah, they don't want to do that. Yeah. So if you can get them where it's just a check-in, 5-10 minutes, we did it in Guam, and it worked really well to be able to, hey, you know, this is how you're going. This is what I want you to work on in the next few games. Is there anything you need to tell me, anything you're struggling with, any questions you have or anything like that? And it just opens the door for them in a bit of a safer, what would be perceived as a safer space for them. But in terms of the screens, I'm probably a little bit different in that, and it's because of how I'm wired, to be able to shut off my mind, I need to be sort of scrolling. Like, it's weird, but, you know, things like, and you're going to laugh, I know, but TikTok is it's probably the only reason I get to sleep at night at the moment, like, because
this is lowest point of this podcast ever.
No, but what I'm trying to highlight is that people are wired differently. Some people need shut off in the quiet, no noise, all that sort of stuff. Some people just need that 5-10 minutes of just some aimless, you know, rubbish, laughing at people falling over and cute dogs, like, you know, and then they can, you know, it turns their mind off a little bit and then they can rest. So, but that comes down to knowing your athletes. So you have to get to know your athletes as quickly as possible, what they need to for best performance, and then you can structure their time accordingly.
Absolutely. So the other part is your support staff. And we won't delve too much into this because it's a fairly mundane topic, but obviously your assistant coaches are who they are. Like, you've got to be able to work with them, but your team manager. I don't want to go down the militant path of everyone must have a rule and, you know, this sort of stuff, but you got to know what your team manager is and isn't going to do with them, because you don't want your team manager rolling the kids up when you're trying to settle them down. Mm. They need to be a fairly, I don't want to say neutral person, but a fairly friendly face that's not going to offer coaching insights or anything like that, but is just going to look after the kids and do what they do with them. Because sometimes the best team managers are ones that understand the game really well, because they understand what you as a coach are going through, but they can also overstep the mark with the players. And it's like, hey, why didn't you just switch out that down screen? It's like, whoa, not your price. Like, it's that sort of thing. So but you do need a balance.
It is really important when you're away in tournament play that you are checking in with your team manager as often as possible, if not nightly, because they will hear things that you never will, and things, you know, if things are starting to brew, or because the kids forget that they're there and they just start talking, and you find out some things that, you know, sometimes you might have to intervene, sometimes you can just leave it, but keeping them on track as well with what you need for the next day or the next 2 days is really important. So meeting with them nightly in tournament play is just, you can't afford not to do it. Same with any medical staff that you have, where they're at, what they need, you know, is there a restriction, is there not, do we need more of this in our warm-up, you know, all that sort of stuff has to be every night.
Yep, makes sense. I think that wraps us up. That's tournament coaching 101. We might come back for 201 at some stage. I think that's how the numbering system works. I'm not completely sure. But tournaments are a lot of fun for coaches, and that's the big thing. But you got to remember that because you are in a tournament, that generally means there's a ton of teams in a really small place. So everyone will be watching you coach. Everyone will be watching your game. Some people will go in between accommodations. Some will stick around. the behavior of coaches in particular, you're on show there. Everyone is watching you. So you got to make sure you're doing the right thing because you do want to set a good example for everyone else because all it takes is for one person to muck up and that thing gets around the tournament real quick. And before you know it, Zoe's watching on TikTok as she's scrolling through people falling over stuff. It's that kind of thing. So high stress environment, absolutely. So you have to look after yourself in that as well. And that is difficult to do. Sometimes you need time to just be the coach. Sometimes you need the time to just be a person. So trying to balance that out and working out what you need and when. And there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, guys, I just need 10 minutes here. Like there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So for mine, I would always try and take myself out of the stadium if I'm not coaching. Like if I'm not scouting, if I'm not coaching, I would try and get out of there and just get sunlight. Because I know like you would have been the same, Coop. So like, we walked into the stadium, I think, on Saturday morning at about 8 o'clock. Fairly light, you know, Geelong. It is what it is. We walked out of there at roughly 10 o'clock. And pitch black. And it's like, what happened to this day? Like, where did it go? Yeah. So you still need a little bit of time to just sort of get out and do stuff. That's that. We are done. Thank you both for jumping in. Coaches, thank you for listening. We will catch you all next week. Good luck with your coaching and crossover games if you're dealing with that this Friday night. And we will catch you next week on the podcast. Tune in and join the tribe.